And he seemed nice enough, but I thought, IT background, he's going to be a geek.
I am.
Yeah, he's not going to relate to people. And the better more I got to know Mike and was watching his clinical work, I realized, well, this man is gifted by God. So we've kept him around here to do IT things do this. Actually, we hired Mike because he was a project manager for Oracle and for, in fact, some other companies, Silicon Valley. And we know that there are two projects here at Reformed Theological Seminary that need management. One would be yours truly, and then the other would be our fearless leader. So Mike has been a great blessing in that sense. But he's here to tell you about the private practice that he developed, and it has some unique features. So, Mike, take it away.
Thank you, Bill. Bill asked me to talk to you guys for a few minutes about some of the ethical things that we have to deal with in Hopewell Counseling, the private practice that I lead. And we have a couple of things that kind of come up frequently. Now, Hopewell is a, it's a private practice outpatient. We don't do some of the things that you guys have seen already in terms of kind of inpatient care or drug and alcohol treatment or something like that, right? We're kind of more garden variety, depression, anxiety, marriage counseling, that's kind of our bailiwick. But we run into our own set of ethical issues. And so I wanted to start off with a story because that's how I like to do things. When I work with premarital couples, love premarital couples, they're, so idealistic. Their marriage is going to be the one that just is perfect. They're not going to have any of those issues that everyone else, over here I got Tara's going, oh, I don't think so. Love working with them, right? My favorite part of premarital counseling is when I ask them this question. I usually look at the husband when I say this. So, Joe, what are you going to do the first time you realize you're attracted to a woman that's not your wife? So usually I get this answer. And I ask the wife the same question. Why do I ask that question? Because it's going to happen, right? That marriage certificate that we sign, that piece of paper, has no impact on our sexual response system at all. Right? Okay. So as a therapist, the fact that you got a license, this piece of paper that's got your license number on it, does not change your sexual response system either, right? And I have found that that's true in my practice. So I'll give you a couple of examples. I moved here in 2006, right? And I've got four kids, as Bill told you, and they all are in sports. And so we were doing Little League Baseball. I love Little League Baseball. Little guys in gray pants with cleats, and they're kind of pigeon-toed holding their bat there at the plate, right? And my wife and I spent many, many, many hours at Liberty Park in Madison watching baseball games. Well, came to know many families through that process, as you do, and there was one in particular whose wife was in my spectrum of attraction. You know how you've got like if you took everyone on the planet, you've got some group over here that you don't feel any attraction to, and then that spectrum moves, right? And you've got some that they're kind of attractive, and then you got like over here, right? Well, this woman was over here. Like every time she sat down next to me, or even in the same kind of area, I felt something change in me. Like I felt this attraction kick in. And I talked to my wife about it. Hey, look, I just want you to know I'm feeling some attraction here. I don't want it to be a secret, right? And Christy's heard this before, right? It's not the first time. Look, it happens, right? So that's all fine, except that she calls me and wants to set up an appointment for therapy. Okay, so remember Bill talked about there's those three kind of stages of how to handle an ethical situation. The first is recognizing that you might have an ethical situation, right? And so I get this call, and I immediately am thinking, okay, I've got it. This is an issue, right? Because I feel a strong attraction to this woman. So what do? I say, well, listen, I need to confer with some folks about this before I can set anything up. Let me call you back. And I got together, and I talked to Bill. I talked to Barb. I talked to Jim. One of the perks of working in the MFT department, right? I got all these folks I can talk to. And I said, here's the situation. Strong attraction, right? I have worked with people that this person knows before, where I've had this kind of casual acquaintance. I'm worried that if I say no, they're going to feel offended because they know I've worked with their friends before. Why not me? But I've got this strong attraction. What do? And I sought consensus. And the consensus was to refer, which I'm sure was obvious to you guys in the beginning. And so I called her up and I said, hey, I've got this ethical situation, and it comes up sometimes in my field where we run into a conflict of interest. And I've hit that with you, and it's going to mean that I can't work with you, but I can refer you to someone else. And she was like, well, what is it? Yeah, what are you going to say, right? Yeah, so my answer was, you know, one of the worst things about this is that I can't tell you. I can't tell you why I can't see you. And it can be, there's lots of different kinds. Sometimes it's, you know, I've got a relationship with someone that is in your family and it just wouldn't work. And sometimes it's other things. And it's just, there's lots of reasons, and I've hit one with you, and I'm sorry, but I won't be able to see you. She was pissed. Okay? I found out later, she was deeply hurt. Okay? And that's okay. Now, I don't wish that for her, but I learned a long time ago the difference between hurt and harm, right? You heard the dentist story, right? So if you go to the dentist and you've got a cavity and he has to drill into your tooth and you got the smoke coming out of your mouth and that, it hurts. Does it harm you? No, it's actually for your good. It's helping you. The candy that I ate that caused the cavity gave me pleasure. Did it hurt me? Yeah. Did it harm me? Yes. Right? Hurt and harm, there's a difference. And we have to understand that even though it hurt her, I was making sure I wouldn't harm her by giving her care that was not ethical, right? That was impaired by my own attraction to her. Okay. Different example. So in another case, I was seeing a woman for anxiety, and it was one of these situations where she had been married for 20 plus years. She had been feeling anxiety for her whole life. Wasn't getting a lot of respect from her husband, wasn't getting a lot of respect from her teenage boys, right? And when she came in, she just had a real, you know, her dress wasn't kind of, you know, always, she was kind of, what's the word, not quite unkempt, but disheveled a little bit, yeah, thank you. And hair hadn't been cut recently and looked tired, you know. And so we spend weeks working together, and you know, she starts to talk about stuff she's never talked about before with anybody, as happens with you guys all, I know. and terrible things that happened to her. And I am understanding her. I am hearing her. I am with her in it, right? I am deeply caring for her, as I'm sure all of you do with your clients. And I noticed one day that she came in and she was wearing very nice clothes. And she had makeup on for the first time, looked like she'd gotten a new haircut. And she had brought in two drinks that she had purchased, and one for me and one for her. Now look. Yeah, and it wasn't alcoholic. It was, you know. Margaritas, woo! But, you know, she did not overtly communicate that there was any attraction there, and I don't know, honestly, exactly what was going on there. But I know that there's this line, this professional boundary for therapists that we have in place for a reason. And one of those is we don't try to turn therapy into a date, right? We don't have food, we don't have drinks with each other, right? Like, it's a professional environment. And so I politely declined the beverage. And that's going to happen with you guys. When you engage with people at such an intimate level, and they are able to connect with another human being and share things that they have not been able to share with others, then if you're in that spectrum at all for attraction, they might feel some of that for you, right? And what are we to do with that, right? Now, for me, I always have this dilemma. Okay, so I suspect that maybe there was some attraction in that case, but I don't know for sure. And I certainly don't want to communicate to her in some way, hey, are you attracted to me? Right? Like, because if she's not, that could be pretty strange, awkward, non-therapeutic maybe. I don't know. And at the same time, I don't want to pretend that it's not there if it is there. And so, what I do there is I kind of take what they give me, right? So I decline the drink. I do not comment on the new haircut. I don't comment on the clothes. I just work with her. And I make that relationship safe. That's what I try to do. And I've had another client that was a little more overt about it. And then I had to say, look, that's just something that never happens in my practice. I just never have any kind of romantic relationship with a client, ever. Right? Again, I'm trying to make it safe. And it's not personal. It's nothing about you. It's just, this is how it is in what I do. Now, I've got a few more minutes. I'm going to tell you one more story. And so, as a client that I was seeing, she was female. She was probably, I would guess, 10 to 12 years younger than me. Bill mentioned that I'm a tall guy. She's about 6 feet tall, and she was very pretty, right? Again, way down on the far end of my attraction spectrum. Not quite the same as the first story I told you. She wasn't, like, pegged at the end there, right? But she was pretty far down the spectrum. And I had some conversations with my group about this client, about what I was feeling and whether I was able to manage it. And so I want to tell you what I would do in sessions with this client. So, you know, I would be working with her, and every now and then I would feel that sensation kind of come up in me, right? That, you know, something in the back of my mind or whatever that sensation is that's attraction, where I know, hey, there's something in me that's not thinking about her in a therapeutic way, but it's thinking about her in a different way, right? And so I'd have to do some self-talk and some self-soothing about, hey, that's not okay. That needs to just step aside focus on what we're doing. And what I was able to find and talk with my group was that I was able to have that actually diminish and go away. And I could be unimpaired in my work with that client. So that all went great. Saw her for quite a while. And then it came time to terminate therapy. And so we have our last session. Talked to her about what the process had been like for her. She communicated a lot of thanks to me for helping her. And as we got up to walk out of the session, she asked me if it would be okay if she gave me a hug. And all of that attraction that I've been able to successfully kind of self-soothe, boom, was there, and it was strong. And this is why we have ethical boundaries that are predefined, because in that 4 seconds between where we were sitting and the door, I was impaired. Okay? And I was able to fall back on what my training had told me, which is we don't hug clients. We don't touch clients in that way, right? And so I answered, no, that just wouldn't be okay. Right? There's people here who might disagree with that, but I can tell you that had there been that kind of physical contact between me and that client, there would have been something happening in me that would not have been for her benefit. Does that make sense? My impression was she kind of knew that it was probably not okay anyway. Just in the way she asked me, if you know. I don't think that one hurt too much. But those are the three stories I wanted to tell you guys. There's other things that come up in my private practice. You know, we deal with Bellhaven students, and a lot of stuff we deal with is, does this person need a psychiatrist? Like, are we qualified to help with this thing that's so big? You know, so we spend a lot of time talking about, okay, do we need coordinated care? What are we going to allow the counselor to work with or not work with, and those kinds of things. But I thought for today's discussion, attraction and the issues. Now, I'm a man, and maybe this is only a male thing. Ladies, you'll have to decide for yourself if you ever have attraction to men. I'm assuming that you do. I'm assuming that will apply as well. That's all I've got.
Mike, thanks so much.
See, he's not just a computer geek. Thanks so much. I appreciate just the open honesty about that reality, that it's a therapy being such an intimate environment. Our boundaries get confused and the client's boundaries get confused. Mike mentioned something in passing that I'd like to elaborate just a little bit. He mentioned my group twice, and Mike is a licensed therapist. He sponsors through Hopewell, of the therapists that are with him, a weekly supervision group. And more than half of the folks that come to that group who are therapists don't need supervision in the sense that they're attempting to be supervised toward licensure. They are free to move on and practice and supervise other people. But I'm a part of that group myself. They talk about those kinds of issues. They supervise one another. It's a peer supervision group for me too in many ways, and I commend Mike for that and commend that practice for all of you to continue to share your issues and the ethical concerns and treatment concerns. I believe tell my students this all the time that. Although a person is licensed to practice in a solo way, that it's very unwise, perhaps unethical, to not be a part of an ongoing supervisory group of some sort. Well, thanks very much, Mike.